It is week 10 of the year 2021, and you're listening to Father Roderick to the Max. Welcome back to another episode of Father Roderick to the Max. Thank you so much for being a monthly supporter. Lots of things to talk about, so let's get going.
Just look at the x-rays. You see that dark spot there? Whiplash.
Whiplash? Oh no.
And this smudge here that looks like my fingerprint? No, that's trauma.
If you've already listened to the latest episode of my podcast, The Walk, you will have heard how busy I've been this week. And I don't think the end is in sight yet. It will still be extremely busy for at least, I expect, more than 2 months. Of course, all of that is because of my upcoming move to a new home. I can't really tell you where I'm going. I would love to share it with you because I'm excited about it. And it's definitely going to happen. But tomorrow is going to be kind of the final talk, and then we can make it more definitive and we can start talking about it. So if you really want to know where I'm going, then make sure you follow me on social media, as most of you are already doing. But because in 2.5 weeks from now, I will have to have vacated this rectory, I've been working ahead of all the deadlines to make sure that I have outsourced at least the next 8 episodes of my TV show. So I have 2 months completely freed up before I have to deliver another episode. And so this past week we filmed in Deventer, in Dokkum, in Oud-Marsum, and in Amersfoort. All that in 1 week, and I also edited a TV show in 1 day, which was insane. And insane in such a way, in a good way. I never thought I could do that in 1 day, and I even finished the episode at a normal time. Well, at least for me, normal was 10 p.m. and then I was done. And I don't recall the last time that I was able to do that. And it's a pretty good episode. I was like, wow, I did not know I had it in me. But anyway, I explain a little bit more what happened and how I did that in The Walk. But suffice it to say that it was physically extremely demanding. And, well, it's always a bit of a risk to plan so many film shoots in such a short time. I don't know many colleagues of mine, unless, you know, maybe those that are doing this as a full-time job, which is not the case with me. At least not TV is not my only media job, as you know. Maybe if you have an entire crew, yeah, you can film more than one episode per week. But most of my colleagues just really could do just one show. We're filming like 4. So in advance, I was a bit worried. Well, maybe I'm overdoing this. I'm not really recovering anymore, but I've learned my lesson after COVID. I know that I have to pace myself and not being Mr. 200%, but be more, you know, Mr. 50%. Just tone it down a little bit. Well, I kind of decided against that advice, thinking, well, this is just a few weeks of really hard work, but then it prevents me from going completely bonkers when I have to move. I cannot imagine working on a TV show or anything for that matter when you're, you know, in front of such a big event. Anyway, we started Saturday, last Saturday, in Amersfoort, which is where I currently live, or a city where I live in a village, but close to Amersfoort. And I told the story of Our Lady of Amersfoort, is one of those miraculous statuettes that was venerated in the Middle Ages and actually played a major role in the entire development of the city, because it was used to be a place of pilgrimage. And the big, beautiful bell tower that is still dominating the heart of the city was built with the money from all those pilgrims that came, that flocked to Amersfoort to ask the Virgin Mary for her help. Now, I found a guest for that show actually is an atheist, and she's doing research. I mean, that's what she told me. She's doing research to find the similarities between all these different medieval stories of miraculous Virgin Marys, and also explains in her research the social dimension of those phenomena. And it was fascinating. It was really I think it's definitely an episode that was surprising also to me, and I learned a lot about the importance of those religious phenomena for the society and for culture. And we were lucky. We were supposed to film that about a week and a half ago on a Thursday, but then I saw that they predicted very, very nasty weather. Of course, we're in the month of March, and the Netherlands is not known for its blue skies and sunny months around this time. So, and part of the show was going to be filmed on a boat in the canals of the city. And then we would climb the tower and end with a beautiful view of the surroundings. And I was looking at the weather forecast, and I was like, it's going to rain. It's going to be overcast. It's going to be so cold and nasty. I cannot see ourselves in a boat. That would feel so unnatural. So I proposed, well, why don't we move it to Saturday? It's the weather forecast is a lot better. And indeed, that happened. It was, you know, it wasn't completely sunny, but we ended the day with an incredible sunset while we were on the tower. And so the final images that we filmed are just stunning. So nice. So that was one. And then the next excursion was to Dockham, which is all the way in the most northern part of the country. It's about a 2-hour ride by car, it was to the town of Dockham, where there is a sanctuary dedicated to Saint Boniface, who was one of those monks from the UK, from England, who came with, just like Willibrord and some of the other guys, who evangelized the Netherlands and first brought the gospel to these regions, and Boniface. This is, we're talking early Middle Ages, was kind of a tough guy, and he was railing against all the superstition of those pagan worshippers that was basically like a natural religion. So they would, you know, pray to the gods of thunder, and, well, you know, the stories about Thor, but also they would have these holy oaks, you know, trees that they would venerate and worship. And he just took an axe and just mowed them all down, which, of course, people were not entirely happy with. Though some people, many people converted, but also he made some enemies. And we still don't really know why he was killed, but a group of robbers surprised him and his disciples in the middle of the night and beheaded him. And he tried to protect himself using a book, a theology book on the Trinity, and the axe didn't go through. Then we still have that book, well, not there in Dockham, but it's still in Germany. And you can see the place where the axe hit the book. But that didn't stop them from killing Boniface in the end. And then in Dockham, I think that was where he was killed. But most of his relics are in Fulda in Germany. Although part of his skull is still venerated as a relic in the parish church of Dockham. Now, Blessed Titus Bransma, who is another, you know, soon to be saint from the northern part of the country. He was a Catholic journalist, a father from the Carmelite order, who was martyred in Dachau by the Nazis because of his defense of the truth. and him denouncing the ideology of Hitler. Before that all started and before the war, he was a strong proponent of creating a nice sanctuary so that people could come to Dachau and learn from the life and the martyrdom of this saint that evangelized the northern part of the Netherlands. And so he was quite visionary. It was like, you know, people need a place to go to. You need a space for rituals. The Catholic faith is tangible, so let's make it tangible. I love that. He was really an entrepreneur. I think if he would still be alive, we would be good friends, I think. Kindred spirit in a certain way. Maybe that sounds a bit pretentious now that I speak it out loud. But yeah, I really, really admire Titus Bransma. And apparently he will be canonized soon. The process is finished in Rome. So now we're waiting for a date. Hopefully we'll be able to go to Rome when he is canonized because of COVID, of course. Right now, everything is in lockdown. I think today or tomorrow, Rome will be in will be code red, rosso. And so everything is closing down. And this is mostly because they want to prevent people from, you know, going outside and congregating because of Easter. So I think we're going to have another Easter celebration where it's just the Pope. Ah, sad times. I so wish this to be over. I miss Rome. But anyway, so we spent an entire day there. It was cold. It was really cold. But I think it was a very informative episode. Plus, I got to see the relic up close and personal because they opened it and they took it out of the shrine. And I don't think many Catholics have been this close to, you know, a relic from the, what is it, 8th century? Insane. It was really, really cool. And it was kind of sad to hear that the parish itself is almost dead. Like, no one comes to church there. I'm like, oh my gosh. You've had two saints, two martyrs that have so much impacted this sanctuary and this place of pilgrimage. And now current-day Catholics are just not caring anymore. How sad is that? I think, oh gosh. My hands are itching to do something about that. Sometime, maybe. And then from Dachau, we went to Oud-Marsum, which is in the eastern part of the country, where that's a very Catholic region. They have this incredible, rich Easter tradition. We were filming this for the Saturday of the weekend of Palm Sunday. So in this city, which still has a beautiful medieval church, and it's a fantastic little town, they have this tradition where I think 8 young men between the age of 20 and 24, they have to be, they can't marry during that time. For a year, for 4 years, they dedicate 4 years of their lives to prepare the Easter celebrations. And I'm not talking about the mass, but I'm talking about all these local traditions of, you know, big Easter fires. There is this tradition of this traditional march or walk through the city where these guys will dress up in beige coats, wearing old fashioned hats straight out of a Humphrey Bogart movie. And they hold hands and walk through the city in a long kind of snake-like procession. And then the people hold hands, like the rest of the city follows. So you've got this huge, huge line of people singing songs, singing Alleluia, walking through the city. And then they enter certain houses where they have these poles that are decorated. And they make like a almost a dance around that pole, and then they continue to the next house. So people open their houses for this procession. So literally, these, they call them the Easter guys, but then in the local dialect it's Paschkels, but we would say Easter guys. They make sure that everybody knows that it's Easter, and so the festivities start on Good Friday, and then they go all the way to second day of Easter. But of course, preparations begin much earlier. Now, for 2 years, this is the second year that all these rituals are put on hold and they can't do it. So all the guys that are currently part of the Easter guys have, you know, their tenure has been extended. They have to stay put and they can't find a replacement. So we spoke to the two oldest ones and they have to wait another 2 years before they can get married. So that is 6 years of their lives that they sacrifice a relationship and founding a family to be kind of these messengers of the Easter message. Stunning. What a great story. So I asked the oldest one, it's like, man, you got to wait another 2 years before you can get married. He said, you know, there's some advantages to that as well. And then we visited this monastery. It was a monastery in the center of the city, but the sisters that lived there have abandoned it a number of years ago. And now it's the place where a couple of young entrepreneurs started a whiskey brewery. And so I got to film there too. And so we tasted some of that whiskey and it was really, really good. So yeah, it was a great day. Cold, but great. Then we went to the city of Deventer. This was on Friday. Yeah, that was just last Friday, 2 days ago. And Deventer was also a great day. It was very cold. It was even like hailing at one point. And of course, the show always has this introduction where I'm on my bike and you show the place where you are. In this case, I knew that the city is built next to the banks of the river, the IJssel. So, and I knew that if you cross the bridge to the other side of the river, you've got this beautiful skyline of the city. And you see the old church towers. It's a beautiful city. But there's only one lane, one road where I knew that you had this open view. Because, of course, if you have a drone, then you can make beautiful pictures there. But I had to find... I knew of one place where I'd been before. Where I knew that's where I can ride my bike. And at the same time, you see the entire city. The thing was, it was storming. It was hailing. And because of that, I didn't take my own bike with me. So I asked the priest that I was interviewing, can you borrow me your bike? Thinking, you know, he's a young guy. He's got a modern bike like I have. And then he brings me this like super ancient bike that looks like from the 1920s. I mean, really, really old and clunky. So, but I had no choice. I had to go and film. And I knew, I saw on the radar on my, I have an app that shows me where the clouds are, that there would be this one little area, this gap in between the rain showers and the hail showers where I may have some sunlight. So I literally had 40 seconds of sunshine. And it's still a small miracle that I was able to capture it on tape, on video. And so the opening shot is me riding my bike in the sunshine with that beautiful cityscape in the background. And 5 seconds later, it starts to hail. Oh my gosh. At one point I was filming myself and I put my camera on a tripod. This is a small camera. It's the M50. The tripod itself is ultra lightweight, carbon fiber. And so I'm crossing this bridge and I want to film myself on the bridge. But of course, on top of the bridge, there's a lot of wind. So I'm on my bike and I'm like pretending that I'm like super relaxed, driving towards the camera, and I see the camera and the entire tripod tilt and then smack against the side of the road. Oh, thankfully it fell against the railing of the highway of the car, the road where the cars were crossing. So it didn't fall on the ground, because otherwise I think the camera would have been, that would have been the end, especially of the lens. But I think I have some specially assigned guardian angels just to protect my camera, because exactly the same thing happened to me in Rome next to the Tiber, another river, where while I was filming and presenting on camera, there is a bit of wind and I see the whole camera crashed to the ground, and miraculously the thing survived. Yeah. Unbelievable. So anyway, that was how I spent my days. And the reason that I'm talking about this during the health segment is that I was like, okay, am I playing with my health? Should I do this or shouldn't I do this? This is one of those gray areas. I know that it saves me a lot of stress in the weeks to come. At the same time, this was too much. This was not healthy. This was not wise. But by the grace of God, I think I made it. I survived. And oh, well, I feel great right now. The other day, I was standing in front of my fridge thinking, I better make sure that I eat everything that is currently still in my fridge before I move. Because I have to, of course, take this fridge with me. And it means that everything that is currently now frozen or being cooled in the fridge, you know what? I have to eat it now or throw it away. I don't want to throw food away. I don't like to do that at all. So I'm trying to come up, and of course, the stuff that I had in my fridge, some of it, I bought it way before I knew that I was ever going to have to move. So now I have to come up with all these recipes with ingredients that don't necessarily match together. So I'm challenging myself to just figure out how to use everything that's in my fridge before, twice. In 2.5 weeks from now, everything will have to be eaten. So I had for this meal, I had spinach, frozen spinach. You know, those little cubes that you have to put in a pan. I had some leftover cream, some thick cream. I had some mushrooms. Those were almost turning, so I was like, I gotta use them today, otherwise I can't eat them anymore, I have to throw them away. And I had some frozen ground meat that I had already cooked in a pan, so it was already kind of ready to go, you just need to defreeze it. And so I made myself a nice pasta. I had a beautiful, thick, you know, like these, an Italian brand of tagliatelle, which are these kind of these strips of pasta. These are like twice as big as the ones I'd normally eat and pretty thick, kind of premium quality. And the reason that they were so big was also the reason that I never used them before, because I'm like, oh, I'm not used to cook with this kind of pasta. Kind of intimidated me a little bit. But now I was like, okay, let's just go for it. Let's try to make a really nice pasta with spinach, cream, and mushrooms, and a bit of ground beef. So that's what I did. I first put the ground beef in the pan with a little bit of oil, let that slow, you know, low fire, defreeze. And then I added, I don't even have onions anymore, and I'm not going to buy them because I know I won't be able to finish it. But I did have garlic powder, so I put in a lot of garlic powder just to kind of give it that nice garlicky taste. It's not as good as fresh garlic, but it'll have to do. Then I added the mushrooms, and because the fat had already started to sizzle, and you have the... I never just pre-prepare the ground beef just like that. I always add herbs and pepper and maybe even onion powder. I don't remember. But anyway, it was nicely flavored. And so you add the mushrooms to that, and then it kind of starts to mix with the flavor. And I added the spinach. That's one of the crazy things about spinach. It's always once you put it in a pan, there's not much left of it. It just reduces so much. So I put in a lot of cubes of spinach, mixed that through. In the meantime, I was cooking the pasta al dente, of course, in salted water. Once the pasta was ready, I preserved a bit of the pasta water, added in the wet pasta in the pan, added the cream, mixed it all together. Very, very simple. Then I add a little bit of pasta water, let that reduce a little bit. So I cooked I took the pasta out a little before al dente, and then I put it in a pan with the sauce, and that made it al dente with the sauce kind of infusing the pasta. And then in the end, I added some of the last bit of Parmesan that I had in the fridge that is also, you know, needs to be finished. And oh my goodness, this was a really, really good pasta dish. I was eating that. I was like, you know what? If they would serve me this in Rome, I'd be totally happy. So it's a funny how sometimes you just put stuff together. It's like, I don't know what I'm doing. I just, whatever. I need to get rid of this. And sometimes it comes out and it's like, let's forget about this meal. And sometimes you're lucky and it's like, wow, I should name this dish. I'm not going to, because you can, and if you want the recipe, just Google pasta, spinach, cream, and mushrooms. You'll find plenty of recipes that are very, very similar. Yeah, my kitchen is full of surprises. Uh-oh. I just realized that I put this entry in the show notes, what I learned, and I didn't fill it in. I forgot to, I forgot to write down what I learned on the internet, and I'm afraid that I didn't learn much this year. Well, only what I really learned, if you want to talk about something that really enlightened me, and it's what I talked about in my regular show, the whole thing about food and your heart, the health of your heart, and how it impacts the brain. But I've already gone in detail in this week's episode of my regular show, so you can go to that. I'm trying to think of if there's anything else. Well, this already kind of more something I wanted to talk about in the last part of the show, but I've been doing a lot of research in architecture, and not just architecture, because why would I, but I'm focusing on building techniques that were used by the Vikings. This is because I've been playing Valheim so much. And in Valheim, one of the things I like, enjoy doing the most, and I never thought that would become a hobby, is to build houses. And it's a bit like in Minecraft, if you've ever seen or played that game. Building stuff is great, and people make the most amazing castles and recreations of famous buildings. Well, this game is very different. The building techniques are very different. But what I like about it is that it has a physics model. So you really have to abide to the laws of construction. Otherwise, your house will collapse. And that is so cool. And I'm really learning how to build a house just by playing a video game. I never thought it. And it's funny. Now I'm even watching like real videos about people building real houses with wood. And I'm thinking, oh, so that's how you create load-bearing pillars. And that's how you open up your hallway so that you don't have pillars every 3 meters. And then I was like, I can't wait to apply that to my dock house on the community server in Valheim. So we have, you know what? Forget about the game segment. I'll talk about it right now. You know, on Discord that we have a gaming section, and some of you are playing Valheim. So Inga created a world where we can build together, and it's so much fun. We had the most crazy adventures lately. The worst, not for me. At one point, Inga loves sailing, right? So that's an old hobby. And of course, she doesn't have a boat right now, but she knows all the techniques of sailing a boat. Well, you can build a real ship in Valheim, and then you can take people along. So Inga built a boat, and she's like, let's explore another island. And then Emil and I were both also live on the server, so we hop into that boat, and Inga takes us to the sea, and then this storm starts ravaging the boat, and the boat can actually get damaged, and you can sink, and then you die, but your stuff is still there. It's you can retrieve it, but then you have to sail to that same place to retrieve your stuff. So thankfully We arrive at this other island across the sea, and we're still in one piece. So I jump out, and I was like, okay, we need to build a base here. So I'm start to build a small hut. And in the meantime, Michiel and Inge are going back to sea for whatever reason. I think I remember what they wanted to do. In order to you can take the boat to go from one island to the other, but you can also create these kind of mystical portals. You need special ingredients, and then you can put one portal in your homestead. You know, we're building this small village of houses, and that's where my dock house is, and Inge has her fortress and whatnot. So there's a portal there, and then you can build a new portal on the other, no matter where on this, you know, in this Viking world, and you can just port from one place to another. But they forgot to take the ingredients, the material, the components for that portal. So that, well, we're going to take the boat back, and we'll just pick whatever we need to build that portal, and then we can easily go from one place to another. In the meantime, I'm building my house. I'm thinking, you know, it takes a while for them to cross the sea, and of course they bump into all sorts of problems. And I'm hearing this live audio commentary of what's happening on the boat, you know. So it's like, oh, watch out. Oh, we're taking damage. Oh, go to the left. No, the other left. No, the right. Oh, there's a sea snake. We're dead. And then they wake up in the place where they have their spawning point. Like, okay, so now we have to retrieve our stuff. But we need to build another boat, because the boat was also destroyed by the sea snake, I think. So they like take a while to build the boat. In the meantime, I was like, okay, I was going to build a small hut, but I have some time. So, you know, let's make a veranda. Let's protect it against the trolls. And I'm starting to make this house. And I was like, I actually really like this house. And then, oh, we're almost there. Okay, so we built this raft. Oh my gosh, it's so hard to go to navigate the seas with this raft. I wish I had a oh, watch out! And we're dead. And we're waking up on the island again. Let's build a real boat now. It's much easier. And so three times is a charm. They finally arrive on the island where, in the meantime, I'd built this, you know, huge house. And it was so funny. I was like, oh, that was the hardest night we've ever spent here in Valheim. I'm thinking, well, what are you talking about? I'm having a great time. Just the only thing I need to do is to keep the dwarves from destroying my my little cottage. But yeah, it was so much fun. And you know what? It's these moments of total mayhem. Where after that evening, you know, we're really good friends. It's like, oh man, I can't believe the adventures that we survived together. And there's some other people also joining us from time to time. Not everyone, of course, is online when we are, and we depend on Inge opening the server. So she has to be at her computer for us to be able to work together in that world. Uh-oh, I think my Alexa heard the word, the trigger word. So now in a second, she's going to tell me that she doesn't understand what I'm talking about, which actually is nothing surprising. So, yeah, Valheim, it is a fun game. You know, if you're at all, you know, interested in games where you... And there's definitely a game element in it as well, because you have to go and challenge the local deities and whatever and survive, and the game has an incredible amount of depth. But it's also what I like the most is just hang out together and have adventures, and it really feels like you're there. It's very atmospheric, mostly because of the sound and the way the world looks. It's a great community building experience. I never thought that this would be one of the ways in which we can build the community of patrons, is just by roaming the virtual seas in the Viking world. It's a ton of fun.
I'm quite keen on comic books, especially the ones about superheroes. I find the whole mythology surrounding superheroes fascinating.
You ever try these comics?
No.
You know something?
No, what?
You read too many comic books.
Okay, speaking of comic books and superheroes, the big event, I think, for DC fans is going to be the premiere of the Snyder Cut of Justice League. Instead of being a movie that is just 2 hours long, it's now a four-hour-plus movie. It is incredible. We get to see it. And what's cool about it, it is, because of COVID, also, you know, premieres online, which means that if you have HBO, you can watch it. But for the rest of the world, there are options, and it depends from country to country. But apparently here in the Netherlands, the biggest theater chain that we have, Pathé, which is originally French, they also have an online movie service, which no one ever uses, because why would you watch a movie online if you can watch it in the theater? But since COVID, of course, their service has been doing quite well because they have movies that you can't see on streaming platforms because they're so new. And apparently they are going to have the movie on demand on March 18. And I don't know about that. There's no price. That's the only thing that worries me a little bit, because Disney has this Disney Premium or Disney Plus VIP or something. And it's so expensive. You pay like $25 just to see a movie. And yeah, sure, you can watch it with your family. But if they tell me, you know, you can see it a few weeks earlier and then it will just be free for if you have a subscription to Disney Plus, hey, I'm just going to wait. So when they first did the experiment with Mulan, I was so surprised. Like, who is going to pay, what is it, $29 just to see a movie? But apparently, many people did. So, but if you look at Pathé, normally when they have a movie like that on demand, it's about $10. That's their regular price. So if it's $10, you bet I'm going to see it. If it's $30, maybe not right away. Well, maybe if I can review it, I will. I don't know. Maybe I'll just treat myself to it. But I am very curious. I mean, going from a very mediocre two-hour movie to a four-hour movie, there's got to be something in there that was left out. Apparently, Snyder actually left the set way before the drama of his daughter killing herself, which was the official reason that they gave us, that he left the production and was replaced by Joss Whedon. Now that Joss Whedon is in such hot water because of his apparent alleged abuse on the sets and the way he treated women, and there's more and more coming to light, which is kind of sad because Joss Whedon was such a, you know, favorite of the fans, and he did great, you know, Firefly, and I love what he did with what was it? Which movie did he direct? Was Age of Ultron? Was that Joss Whedon? Or, well, anyway, Avengers. Well, definitely Avengers. But anyway, but knowing that, again, this is someone who just abused his power, and anyway. Snyder apparently was fired before that because the studio wanted him to cut down his opus magnum to just 2 hours, just because of money. And he was like, yeah, I need my time. I this is going to be a four-hour movie. And be glad it's not 6 hours like my original version. And so, well, talked about it last week as well. Apparently, he didn't get paid to direct this special cut, this version of the movie. But I do want to see it. I do respect it, even though I don't like the dark DC direction. But I still think, you know, it's worth. I think we should give this franchise another chance. So I'll let you know if I've seen it next week. If not, maybe sometime later. I've already talked about Falcon and the Winter Soldier in my regular show. I'm also getting a lot of I'm getting a kick out of listening to old reviews of Marvel movies. I'm currently rewatching some of the classic Marvel movies. So I watched Age of Ultron again, and that was not one of my favorite movies, but it actually, the movie has its moments, And then I'm usually listening to a few podcasts where they review the movie. And one of my favorite movie review podcasts is Now Playing Podcast. And so they talk about Age of Ultron, and then they predict what may happen in the Infinity Wars and all the other subsequent Marvel movies. And that too is very entertaining to hear them speculate, and maybe this will happen, maybe that will happen. And you're there with all the extra knowledge, like, you were right on the money there. And oh, wow. You could have never guessed that this would go in a totally different direction. But it's fun to listen to the speculation, knowing what would truly happen. That's it for the superhero segment. Let's move over to the world of liturgy. So what we will do with the International Mass now that I have to move and I can no longer celebrate Holy Week and future International Masses in the church where I built it all up exactly a year ago. It's crazy. I remember one of the first Masses that I streamed was on Laetare Sunday, which is today. It's the day that I'm recording this, probably not the day that you're listening to this. But anyway, so I was wearing my chasuble, rose chasuble, and I was facing east because it was much nicer to film from the other side, so you could see the empty church behind me and the kind of the architecture of the church. Because back then, when we started, the church wasn't very pretty. It was basically a white wall. The tabernacle was to the left side, and it didn't look good at all. If you would put the camera near the altar, and I think I was still doing everything myself. I think I was using just one camera, and I was Inga wasn't helping me. We didn't have the fancy PVZ cameras yet, so I needed the computer. Maybe I used my laptop. Now that I think of it, maybe it was just a MacBook on the altar. And so because the camera was very close to the altar because of the USB cable, you couldn't see the space around the altar like you are able to see it now. And so the only thing you would see is this white wall. It was awful. So I turned everything around. And I remember just celebrating Mass with just the internet viewers there. No one else was in the church. It was all complete, total lockdown. And that's when you realize how far we've come. So we build up so much. And just today, we maxed out, I think. So there were so many people there. And then I usually walk out the door, and so when people leave the church, I can greet them outside. And all these people are like, oh, we don't want you to go. We don't. That we love this Mass. This Mass works for us. This is our language. And will there be another English Mass here in the parish? And I was like, probably not. So yeah, I'm definitely leaving something behind. And for the current physical parishioners who came to that Mass, many of which I never saw in during my regular Masses. Yeah. Anyway, we've come a long way. And of course, I've been asking myself, how do we continue this? So I'm moving to a parish that has, where there's also right now an English Mass, but it's been built up by the local priest there. And what I don't want is that I somehow intrude with what he built up. I don't think that's fair, and I don't think that's good, because after all, I'm just living there, but I don't have a pastoral mission in that parish. And I feel that Mass, the liturgy, is part of the pastoral ministry of a priest. You can't separate those. It's not a performance. And in a certain way, I have a pastoral relationship with my internet parish, so it makes sense for me to stream Mass. So, but on the other hand, you can understand that if there's already an International Mass that is streamed, and it's in the same parish, it doesn't make sense for me to stream Mass, you know, just a few kilometers away. And of course, I can do it by myself, alone, but then we're back to the beginning. So it's a bit tricky. I think what my reasoning right now is there is an international mass. You can watch it online, and I can celebrate there, but I will probably not do the homily. But it's still a mass, and I'm there, and it's in English, and a priest, the current priest, is also a great priest. So, you know what? I'm not going to duplicate this, but I still think that I'm onto something with this combination of geek examples and combining the world of entertainment and gaming and movies with the gospel. That's kind of my thing. And then the other day I was driving with my director and cameraman to, I think it was to Ode Marsum. And we were talking about a series that he made for TV, which was a course in mysticism. And he filmed that with a hermit who lives in the Netherlands. And the entire show is or the TV series is these 10-minute episodes where it's basically just this priest or this hermit educating, talking. Everything is scripted. But the way it was filmed was very cool. It was just like, it's not just a talking head. They did tons of stuff to illustrate and to, you know, it was really, I was watching TV and it was I thought it was an impressive combination of pretty heavy duty stuff, educational stuff, with a form that works really well on television. And that really gave me an idea. It's like, what I currently do in the homily, I can take that to another level maybe. Maybe I can make a series kind of with a quality, maybe not the same as what they did for mysticism, but in along the same lines of, you know, there are ways, creative ways, to convey what I would normally just preach from the pulpit in church, but to turn that into something that's much more of a, you know, an experience. So I don't know. That's kind of my first idea is, I don't think I should duplicate this English mass. I want to work together. Let's just merge this. But then I also really think that I have a specific mission geared towards the geeks, and that's something I want to continue because that's unique. That I don't think that many other priests, well, not on a worldwide level, but there were certainly priests that are just as geeky, if not geekier, than I am. But in the Netherlands, it's pretty rare to have that combination. So it's something I feel like I should continue that. I don't want to throw that overboard. But maybe there is a new form in which I can do the same, and maybe even better than I can do in a homily. Because, of course, a homily is it's not the most visually appealing experience. In the context of the entire liturgy, of course, there's lots to watch, lots to see, because it's Catholic liturgy. But yeah. So anyway, there's a lot kind of bubbling, and I hope that the people that are currently following me for these masses, that they understand that it's going to be nigh impossible for me to do the same thing in the weeks to come. But I think we can totally kind of work out something with the other priest, and for Holy Week, I think what he wants to do is just mass in Dutch for his own parishioners and for his international community, but then add a bit of English from time to time during that mass. And fortunately, the celebrations of Holy Week are highly visual, so you can still follow along. And plus, it's Catholic liturgy, so it's the same everywhere in the world. So even if you don't understand everything, you know, if American tourists go to the Vatican, everything is in Italian. That doesn't stop people from enjoying the celebrations on St. Peter's Square or in the Basilica. So maybe we can do it like that. Anyway, just wanted to share you my current thought process. If you have any ideas or suggestions, you know where to find me. Just go to the Discord server. That wraps it up for today. I've already talked about our Valheim adventures. If you want to see us in ships being attacked by sea monsters, then to keep an eye on the Discord server. And when we go live, then usually Inge also streams her game directly to the Discord server. All right, Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a patron. And see you next week.